third hour. Landers, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, only in Benton, exit 121. Kevin Wilson is signing some deals, as he does every day, and wants to do for you.
Look at that sun poking out in the clouds right there.
Hey, pokey.
Looking good.
Come on, sun, come on.
Come on out here.
Back in the studio is Matty T, answering your calls, pushing the
knobs. I've got some help from the intern on the phones today.
Oh, you're twisting the knobs and pushing the buttons. But what are you doing with the dials? We don't even want to know.
That's for me to know and for you to think about.
How are you? 501-433-1037. If you want to get in about anything, we soon are going to go to Trey Schaap in a couple minutes. He's live down at Destin.
Earlier, we got the take straight from the horse's mouth. Soon, we'll get it straight from a horse's mouth. So, that's coming up.
We'll get it.
There he is, actually.
From the other end of the horse.
Yeah, he's on the line whenever you're ready.
Live from Destin, from the horse's mouth, and then from the other end of the horse. That would be George Schroeder. Is that Trey Schaap?
Yes, sir.
Hey, buddy. How you doing down there?
What's up, boys?
This live report from the SEC Spring Meetings in Sandestin, Florida, is sponsored by First Arkansas Bank and Trust.
Well, Trey Schaap down there?
Yeah, it's a rainy day in Sandestin, Florida.
We've heard it's rainy down there. Now, what are you going to do with your family with everybody stuck inside the hotel?
They're just stuck inside the hotel. I mean, they get to see the inside of the hotel like I've been seeing the inside of the hotel for the past 2 days.
They'll probably dial up a few movies. Be careful. Probably. They may run up the tab over there watching those movies.
That's true.
What? This is the second to last day, correct? Does it conclude today
or
tomorrow?
Yeah, it is tomorrow. Tonight they have a banquet where they honor the Professor of the Year, the McWhorter Scholarship winners, some student-athletes get recognized tonight, and then tomorrow they wrap up their general business meeting where the chancellors and presidents will vote on all the legislation that the ADs got from coaches that wanted to pass that on. And so tomorrow is when all of the votes take place. And then tomorrow is also the big day, Pat, because that is when the SEC writes the checks and hands them. The checks are already written, but that is when the SEC presents the checks to the universities. And it's divided basically 14 ways. They take out operating expenses for the conference office, and then each school will get an equal share of the revenue from this past year. So probably going to be around, I would say, $24 to $25 million per school.
So they just cut the check just like that. I wonder who carries it back. Boy, that's amazing. Is that direct deposit? I think I'd have to have that direct deposit. Maybe even split up in a few accounts.
Are you sure it's not one of those huge checks like you get if you want to pick golf tournament or something? And that's not going to fit in your carry-on luggage.
Or was it, who was it, Ricky Henderson, when he got his first $1 million check, he was so happy he framed it, he never even cashed it. This guy was like, hey, I got this. His team was like, hey, I got it here on record. You've never cashed your first check. Oh, yeah, I got it hanging on the wall. I was so proud of it.
No, so proud of that first million.
You don't get it, Ricky?
I would go cash it, not frame the receipt.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, coming, you got a chance to talk to quite a few characters down there. I know you had an extensive conversation with Gus Malzahn.
Had a good conversation with Gus yesterday, and also Bruce Pearl, John Calipari, Gary Pinkle. I talked to Bill Hancock yesterday.
What's he still doing around there?
Executive director of the College Football Playoff.
Oh, come on. That's a joke, right?
Nope. That's his title.
So he went from the head of the BCS
to now executive director of the College Football Playoff.
So what is Jeff Long's title?
Jeff Long is the chair of the selection committee.
Okay.
Yes.
So Bill Hancock.
All those titles kind of run together.
I mean, what a life.
Kind of, yeah.
So now, we're not blaming him for anything anymore, I guess? He's back in our good graces?
Well, you can't blame him for anything right now because nothing's really happened yet. But now, become that number five team that doesn't get in the playoff, and then you can start questioning Well, why didn't we get in? I don't think we have to worry about that right now, though.
Is it fair to say that he got a high level of criticism when he was the executive director of the BCS?
I think he took some shots, but the criteria was there. It was set, so everybody knew what it was. And whether or not you liked it,
The part I didn't like was how he and his cronies bamboozled everybody into believing these BCS games were of the utmost importance, and all it was a big money grab, and everybody could see through it. But yet everybody played these games like it wasn't about the money for these guys. Like, who really needs an exec? What does the executive director do is my question. And does he have an answer for that?
He runs everything, Matt.
He runs everything. Okay. Yeah. Does he schedule, like, the buses? Does he schedule the flights? Does he book the officials? I mean, those are the things you need. Does he sell popcorn? Does he make the popcorn? Is he pouring Cokes?
It seems If he had to, he probably would.
It seems like he would have more to do in this role than he did at the BCS level, only because
I just
want to
know what he does. Is he negotiating television contracts?
I think he just has an email address. He has an email address.
Hey, guys, just keep me in the loop.
He's actually got an office.
Well, I'm sure. You know what he is? He's the guy at the office that carries a bunch of papers under his arms and just walks around the halls and goes, gotta go, gotta go, see you guys, include me in the email, see you guys, gotta go. He's that guy. You ever notice that guy walks around with a bunch of papers in the office down the hallways?
He's that guy.
I know there is definitely a bunch of people under him that could probably – was he getting paid to do that?
That's a good question. I don't know.
A lot of money, I'm going to say.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I equate college football and directors with lots of money.
And you know what's great about that gig?
Nice job if you could get it.
Yeah, and you know what's great about that gig? You can only get it. The only thing that allows you to be ready and prepared to be executive director of the college football playoff is to be executive director of the BCS. So he's the only one who could have got that job.
Yeah. Do y'all mind if I list y'all as references on my resume that I send in to be the deputy director? Because if the director's not doing anything, then the deputy director to the assistant manager cannot be too much of a workload that I can't handle.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, you got a chance to talk to him.
Just pop popcorn.
Yeah, you never know. If you got to do it, you got to do it. What did you talk to Bill Hancock, the executive director of the college football playoff? What did you talk to that gentleman about?
A couple of questions I asked him was, I asked him one question about will the playoffs expand? Will it expand to six teams, eight teams?
Good question.
In the near future. And he said, nope, this is a model that they're going to go with for 14 years. So in 2025, if they come back and they want to expand more, then possibly they will. But it's later than that. 2025, I think, is when they revisit to work on a new format if they want to. But until then, it's four teams, and it's going to be four teams. The BCS was here for as long as it was. He said that people need to get used to this because this is the model. This is what they're going to go with. And he did take some questions from some of the coaches, the football coaches that were in their meetings. He slipped into a room, and they asked him questions about scheduling. And they're going to look at the whole 12-game schedule, not just what you do in your conference, but every game that you play is going to be factored in. And then the committee, he said, will have more information than they need, meaning they'll have statistics, they'll have what they did against one their win-loss record, what they did against teams, how teams that they have played have done, how they did on the road, how they did at home. They'll watch a lot of video, a lot of games. They'll get the coaches' tape without the commercials that they can sit and watch. And then they will start putting that together, and then they'll start releasing their poll on October the 27th.
When will they start to meet, and how often will they meet?
I think they will meet every 2 weeks. And I think they start to meet the second week of the season.
Okay, every 2 weeks, starting the second week of the season. And when they put out their poll,
it's
going to
be on ESPN Tuesday night.
Top 25 poll and it will be just a 1 through 25, or will they have some kind of number behind it, sort of how the BCS did it?
It'll be 1 through 25.
Just 1 through 25. Okay.
Yes. And then those top four would be the ones that would go and play in the playoff, and they will also see the other six bigger bowls. And that's one thing Nick Saban was talking about this week down here is, why not have this selection committee seed all the bowls?
If you got heard an NCAA that. Yeah, tournament, explain that to me, because I like that. Well, I like that idea.
If you have the NCAA tournament committee, they seed all 68 teams. So Nick Saban is saying, if these guys are qualified enough, if this committee is qualified enough to select the top four teams and seed six other bowls, why not just have them seed every bowl and put a team with every bowl game? Because they would know if you have a 5-7 team that comes out of the SEC, yes, they've played a tougher schedule than, let's say, maybe a Troy that comes out of the Sun Belt at 7-5. So would you take that 5-7 team to make a better bowl game over a 7-5 team? Because
at
5-7, you don't qualify for a bowl game because you have to have your record be 500.
Sure. I like that way of thinking, and maybe someday, hopefully, it'll get to that. I've always scratched my head at how, and I understand a lot of it goes to history and tradition with certain leagues being tied into certain bowls, but when you look at it, you have so many teams that will play in BCS games and make all that money and get all the attention and talk about it because of what they were tied in versus are they really deserving to play in one of these top-level bowls. And
right.
They're not one of the top-level teams. So that's kind of always irked me about how they did the bowl system. That's a great idea. I wonder if that'll ever get any legs, but
I just don't see it ever getting any legs.
It might in the future, but I don't think it will right now.
Because you're going to take the autonomy away from these bowls that make money on their own.
You and your autonomy. I mean, come on already, okay?
That's been a big topic, too.
They want to be able to put who they think will get the most people there. Regardless of,
I think there's always a conflict of interest.
I agree as well. But I mean, that's just sort of the way it's been.
I'd have my hand out. You know what I mean? Listen, I'm corrupt without money. I'm corrupt with money. It don't matter. Don't matter. So you talked to Bill Hancock, and I'm glad you got some good info out of him. Who else? You had an extended conversation with a one Gus Malzahn, and I saw an article where Brett Bielema believes the rivalry with he and Gus Malzahn has been blown way out of proportion.
Well, I didn't get into that with Gus, but Brett thinks that last year, it really didn't start here at the spring meetings. There were a couple of coaches. Brett was one of them, though, that talked about the hurry up, no huddle, and trying to implement the 10-second rule that really got brought up more at SEC football media days, and that's where he and Gus kind of butted heads, because Gus basically said, is that some kind of joke or something? And Brett was totally honest about it. He said, no, it's not a joke. It's a safety issue. And Nick Saban even said this year here that if you think about it, a couple of years ago, you might have played at 65 plays in a game. Now, teams are averaging around 80 to 85 plays a game. So you add that up, that's like playing three extra games in a season from what you used to do. Mm. And he said, the more plays you play, the more risk for injury there is. So, yes, if you're playing 85 plays a game, is there more risk for injury? Well, there's a lot more risk than if you were playing just 65 plays a game. And if you had that 10-second rule, it would slow them down a little bit to where they couldn't play as many plays.
Trey, I'd be curious to get somebody who, you know, is day in and day out studying a lot of these numbers and how that affects it.
Some of the coaches, Pat, have asked for, is there research on that? Hugh Freeze was one of them, and I think the research is going to be coming. I think there are going to be some people that will do studies. They'll go back and they'll look at tape from last year, and then they'll really harp in on it this year and try and come up with some solid numbers so that they can provide that with the coaches and the competitions committee to see if they need to tweak the rules.
Because I guess my question would be this. I understand that any time spent on the field is a risk for injury, any time, whether it's kickoff, punt, any kind. But I would ask this question, with that information we have, where it's gone from an average of 65 plays to 85 plays, has it changed? Is the 65 play, let's just say that six, when it was average 65 play, was it much more of a physical hit, just grind it out, tough, you are going to be in somebody's face and you're going to be battling every one of those 65 plays versus the 85 plays now is a much different type of 85 plays offensive run? That would be my question. Is it as much of a type of style that you play in 85 where you have that extreme risk of injury versus...
Well, it is a different style. It's more of a hurry-up now. That's
it's
why
a more hurry-up, but does playing in a hurry-up like that, is that have the same every down risk issue, injury issues that it would with the 65 ground it out, pound it on the ground type strategy? That I'm just curious to know if that has any effect. Certainly,
yeah,
look, Gus Malzahn runs a bunch of plays, and he does it on the ground too, so maybe that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Let's switch to the early signing period, which...
Yeah, for college football.
Yeah, that's
The SEC is against it, mm-hmm. but they did work on a model that they would like to be presented to the Collegiate Commissioners Association, which meets in June, if necessary. And the ACC wants to have an early signing date in August. The SEC does not. The SEC would like to see an early signing date the Monday after Thanksgiving. That is the football coaches in the SEC. The SEC doesn't really want to have an early signing period. And this could all be tabled struck down if the chancellors and presidents say, no, we don't want to go that way. They have before. But if it does come up at the Collegiate Commissioners Association, the SEC has a model they think would benefit everybody. And one thing Georgia coach Mark Richt said yesterday was the fact that if you have a signing date in August, you're not going to have much of a summer if you're a head football coach, because you're going to be doing a lot of recruiting. And the other thing that the SEC would like to see, if you have this Monday signing date the day after Thanksgiving, for the Monday after Thanksgiving, is that it would be for only those players that know they want to go to a specific school, say like Arkansas. If you have someone from in-state, they know they want to be a Razorback, they grew up wanting to be a Razorback, they're not going to take any official visits, then they can go ahead and sign early. If they want to take official visits, then they have to wait to the February signing period.
When people talk about moving the dates, and you have not, it just seems like you're moving them back. If it was in December, now they could also, they recruit now throughout the season, correct?
Well, yeah, but you also have official visits in January.
Yeah.
And that is, for those players would not be able to sign early because they want to take those official visits. And that's the majority of the time when most of the official visits are taking place, either during the season or into January. And that's something that, if this does pass, that the players that want to take official visits, okay, you can still take official visits, but you're going to have to wait until the February signing period. If you don't want to take an official visit, if you know you want to be an Aggie, you know you want to be an Auburn Tiger, if you know you want to be an LSU Tiger, if you know you want to be a Mississippi State Bulldog, then sign in December. Signed the Monday after Thanksgiving.
And the last thing I want to ask you about was the basketball with the three permanent mm-hmm. opponents, which I don't know how they're going to come up with this for it to be fair. Have they decided how they're going to do that?
Well, one thing that they're thinking about doing, Pat, is, okay, Arkansas and Missouri, they're permanent opponents in basketball. They're going to stay that way. But you're going to have two others. Well, okay, that gives you right there six games a year, but you're still going to keep an 18-game schedule. So one thing that John Calipari said is, let's look each year at which teams were good last year, and let's, for the other two games, or the other two teams that you would have to play home and away, let's pair the good teams up there
mm-hmm.
to kind of make it a level playing field to where the SEC might potentially be able to get more teams into the dance because their conference record helps. Take, for instance, South Carolina this past year. And I know they beat Arkansas in the SEC tournament, But if they would have played, let's see, if they didn't have to play a Kentucky twice, a Florida twice, their conference schedule probably record would have been better. So that's something that the SEC is going to look at. And then they've got Mark Whitworth, who basically is going to go over the schedule and take some of the coaches' input of who they would like to see as their permanent opponents. And they will have three permanent opponents. Two teams will rotate. You will still play five games at home, five games on the road with those teams. And then the others, you'll either play them on the road or you'll play them at home.
And to me, this talk affects the bubble teams more than it affects.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's based supposed to be, when you talk about the NCAA tournament, it's supposed to be based on your body of work and your resume. So if you go to Florida and you lose at Florida, if you go to Kentucky, you lose at Kentucky, those aren't bad losses by any means. But if you're a bubble team, like Arkansas was last year, you need numbers in the W column, period. So I could see how I like that. Listen, I'm all about level playing fields. I am all about everybody in the SEC playing everybody home and away. That's what I'm all about. I know that's what, 26 games? That's, so be it.
It's too many games. It's not going to happen.
So be it. I don't care. Rework everything.
Well, good luck.
Start over.
No other games. We don't play anybody else.
No one else.
You want a level playing field? That's the only way to do it.
That's right. The South. That's the playing field.
Not going to happen. Listen,
that's how we do it in the Salt Tray, Shap. I don't know if you've ever heard. Anyway,
heard
buddy. So we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
I'll be driving back tomorrow.
Okay. Well, we could talk to you from the road.
From first unknown.
Make sure you have a hands-free kit, though. I don't want, you know, distracted.
I understand, Matty. I appreciate that.
See, he's always worried about safety.
I am. I care too much. That's what they say.
He's a freak like that.
It's your biggest weakness. You care too much. You work too hard.
Matty C, were you on safety patrol in school?
I was. I wore the orange vest.
You a hall monitor?
I was. I was the king of the hall monitors.
Wow.
I didn't know they...
With such pride.
I didn't know they had a king.
Such hubris. He brings that up to
the
table.
Who was the queen of the hall monitors? I thought it was voted on. I didn't think it was, like, ordained. Is that what
I was self-appointed.
Is? So you were born into
himself.
It? You appointed himself. I got you.
Self-ordained. Appointed, yes.
All right. Later, Trey, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Hey, don't forget, go to myvacationhaven.com, and you can get that great deal. All you have to do is enter the promo code BUZZ, B-U-Z-Z, and you get a great deal if you register before June the 1st, or if you sign up and book before June the 1st. It's myvacationhaven.com, or you can call 1-800-553-0188. They have over more than 130 vacation rentals in the Destin, Fort Walton Beach area.